Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're discussing reliable rides, a build back blow up, and gifting crypto.
Right, this is a very festive Friday flight where we're going to cover a bunch of different stories we came across this week, how it's going to impact your money. And it's not festive in the sense that we've got a bunch of stories about Christmas trees and snow, that kind of thing. although...
Sadly.
Yeah, so I do have a question for you. There's a story recently about gifting cryptocurrencies.
Yeah.
More folks are doing this. This is a feature that's actually built into Coinbase, right? Which is one of the largest cryptocurrency exchanges where you can do that for free. You're not charged any fees, so depending on what platform you're with, make sure that you are aware of any fees. But what are your thoughts in general about... Yeah, giving somebody cryptocurrencies.
That's a good question. Well, first I want to wish you a happy birthday, because Christmas Eve, not just Christmas Eve, it's also your birthday.
That's right. And thank you, sir.
Yeah, so if you want to send...
Still in my 30s.
...Matt cryptocurrency for his birthday, you can do that. I think that's actually what he's trying to get at here.
Oh, should I go ahead and put my... At least put my, like, my cash handle on my Venmo?
Yes.
I guess with Coinbase, there's like a unique URL that you get. Maybe I should get that set up so folks can just send me some crypto direct.
We'll put it in the show notes. I'm sure people will start sending you Bitcoin in
droves.
We
won't do that.
All right. So my thoughts on gifting cryptocurrency are, well, one, I didn't realize that apparently people want cryptocurrency as a gift. I saw this like Magnify Money survey saying that a lot of Americans, something like 2/3 of Americans want investments as gifts. Of those folks, the number one investment people want as a gift is cryptocurrency. So I found that to be interesting. And I guess it makes sense. Like, it's popping in the headlines. Everybody's talking about it. And it's like, well, is Bitcoin going to the moon? I want a little bit of that, but I haven't necessarily done it myself. But I guess I kind of side on the, let's probably not give cryptocurrency to each other as a gift. Largely because I think that there are better gifts to give people, that there are more thoughtful gifts. I do think, though, when we're talking about especially young folks who are interested in investing but haven't yet begun that journey, sometimes the gift of an investment can be the kickstarter into getting more interested and getting the ball rolling. I've always found it kind of murky and weird to give an investment, though, because it's like, I'd rather give you cash and then help you open up a Roth IRA because that's better than a brokerage account or whatever, or then like a stockpile gift card or whatever.
Government bond. I remember like my friends as a kid growing up, and they'd like pull out this bond. It was like literally a, you know, printed out as a piece of paper from the U.S. government. And I just remember thinking, like, what is that? Like, as a kid, I had no clue.
Did you ever have grandparents that would give you like gold coins or like silver dollars or anything like that?
You got literal gold coins?
Not
you got
real gold, but I guess like the Sacagawea dollars were gold, right? Made of actual gold.
Always got the $2 bill. So in the birthday card as a kid growing up,
those are cool too.
For like, I don't know, like my first 10 years receiving the birthday card from my grandparents, it was always the rare $2 bill. But I do hear what you're saying. I do think that kind of mindset shift that can allow someone to start thinking of themselves as an investor, even if it's a cryptocurrency. I'm kind of struggling with it because I don't want people to invest there if they haven't invested anywhere else. But when it comes to whether or not it makes a decent gift, like I almost see it as like when someone sometimes folks will gift lottery tickets, like scratch-offs, which I've never done. I don't think I've even ever received lottery tickets as a gift before, but I'm for it. I'd be okay if somebody did that because it can just be a really fun thing. Gifts in general, they're not things that you're giving because somebody needs something, right? It's sort of like this cherry on top. It's just this little extra thing.
That's why gifts of underwear and socks are the worst, because you're like, that's not the point of a gift.
That's something I literally need.
That's utilitarian. I'll go get it myself, okay? Thank you.
And just generally speaking, with how we view cryptocurrencies, right? Like, we think that if you are investing in your tax-sheltered accounts first, that it is okay if you have up to 5% of your money, of your portfolio, within cryptocurrency. There's just been more trust, and as more institutions and individuals are coming into the space, it continues to provide these layers of trust, and this network of cryptocurrency continues to build out. I do think it's becoming more and more proven. So generally speaking, you and I, we're okay with a little bit of cryptocurrency, but whether or not it should be a gift or not, it sounds like you're on the I'll pass side of it, and I'm on the I'll take it side of it. things.
Yeah, I'm more on the fence. Like, but I probably, actually, I know I'm not giving cryptocurrency to anybody this year.
And nor
I've
am
never,
I.
I've never gifted.
I'm not going to give you any either.
I've never gifted stocks or the gift of an index fund to anybody either. I guess I just think that investing is something that's like an individual choice almost. And
it's too personal?
It doesn't strike me as a gift. Well, especially, like I said, when we continually talk about people prioritizing tax-sheltered accounts, if I give them a gift of an individual stock, that doesn't make much sense for my investing philosophy either. So we, course, want people to invest, but maybe cash with a note with a book about investing, something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe like that's a better gift.
Yeah, a book on investing with a $50 bill bookmark.
There you go.
Which, okay.
Not a $2 bill bookmark. That's not going to get you far enough.
Not going to get you far. Another real quick aside. How do you feel about the tungsten cubes? So a lot of like the crypto fans, they're getting their hands on like, you know, the tungsten cube. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah, I know.
It's like a super heavy metal.
I don't really care. It looks, it sounds like a paperweight to me, and I don't really need one.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of dumb.
I'm glad they like
but
it.
But I do want to actually hold one at some point and see how heavy it is. Like, I'm going to grab it, and when I finally see one, I just want to be able to say, oh, wow, it really is heavy. And then move on with my life.
It is as heavy as they say. All right, well, let's move on, Matt. And let's get wonky first with it. So let's get a little nerdy here, because the Federal Reserve indicated that they would be hiking interest rates 3 times next year. They announced this last week. That's at least in all likelihood what it seems like is going
to
happen.
When prior to that announcement, they were thinking they weren't going to raise rates at all next year. Yeah. It wasn't going to be until 2023, and now they're going to do it 3 times next year?
So it's a quick shift, and it has people thinking. Actually, I would say maybe most people aren't thinking. Maybe most people are like, boring, don't care at all. My eyes glazed over. I don't listen when Jerome Powell speaks.
But that's why they have Matt and Joel to talk about
this. So maybe we can make it a little more palatable. But yeah, basically, we wanted to let you know what we think this announcement means for your money, how it's going to impact you. And we think it's going to have impacts in a few different ways. And I got to say, I think it's important to note that the motivation to raise rates is mostly in an attempt to slow the inflation that we've been seeing that has been on all of our minds, at least to a certain extent, as we go shopping, as we go to the grocery store. And, you know, rapidly rising prices are becoming a bigger problem. And so raising interest rates in 2022 is one way to slow down the momentum that inflation is currently having. And so I think that's why it's happening. And it makes sense from that standpoint.
Yeah, and so hopefully inflation becomes something that we're not talking about on a weekly basis by the time 2023 rolls around. That's certainly a part of the goal here. But there are going to be other side effects of rising interest rates, of the rising benchmark rate that the Fed puts out. And one thing is that if you have a variable interest rate on a home loan, or if you still have some credit card debt, that interest rate will be going up. Keep in mind, this isn't going to be happening overnight, and it's not going to happen by like a shockingly large amount. But if you still have some credit card debt, focusing on paying that debt off makes even more sense in an environment of rising rates. And that's the period of time that we're likely going to enter.
Yes, agreed. And Matt, you mentioned home loans with a variable interest rate. Mm-hmm. Well, if you've got one of those, refinancing into a fixed rate mortgage makes more sense, again, in that rising rate environment, if you plan to be in that home for a while. And even if you have a fixed rate mortgage, it might make sense to refinance as well, depending on what your current rate is. So yeah, the writing on the wall, it makes it seem as though rising rates are going to begin to lead to higher mortgage interest rates. That is at least the way things currently stand. But yeah, refinancing, while they're still ridiculously low, can make sense for a lot of people. And plus, you know, you might have a little bit of extra time around the holidays, so it could be a great time to submit that application. And we've got an article on howtomoney.com. We'll link to it in the show notes that you should check out, that kind of gives you what you need to think about when it comes to refinancing a mortgage and how you can go about shopping for the best rate.
That's right. And so that's for existing homeowners. I will say too, if you are a first-time home buyer and you're starting to look at properties, I don't want you freaking out thinking that, oh my gosh, mortgage rates are going to be on the rise. We got to find a place in the next 2 months. Because first of all, it is likely going to be inevitable that we're going to see rates go up from where they are currently. But it's going to take a long time. It's going to be a very gradual process. And so just keep in mind that there are so many other things you need to keep in mind before you buy a house. It doesn't need to be about, you know, rising prices of homes or current mortgage rates at, you know, almost all-time lows. You need to make sure that you have your own personal finances in order before you make a decision, like a big decision like this, purely based on market factors.
Yeah, and Matt, one other potential impact, again, we don't know, of rising interest rates is that it could cool off the housing market a little bit.
That's true.
And slow, at least.
It could.
The rate of home pricing.
But we don't know.
Right.
That's why you have to make these decisions based on your own situation, what you've got going on.
Yep. And what else is going on, Matt? Well, student loan payments may never resume.
That's right.
Or they'll resume in May.
It seems like we're on pace for them to never resume. So everybody with student loans are rejoicing.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like an early Christmas present to anybody who has federal student loans, because instead of those student loans resuming, those payments resuming in February of next year, which is like, a rude awakening early after the year begins. For the time being, that student loan payment moratorium has been extended until May 1st for all federal student loan borrowers.
That's right.
And yeah, we'll see how long this can keeps getting kicked down the road. We'll report back if it extends any further. But for the time being, May 1st is going to be the date when your student loan payments will resume.
That's right. Federal borrowers have another 3 months. Joel, let's keep moving. And, you know, even though there are a number of aspects of our lives that don't feel like they're quite back to normal yet, there are parts of our financial lives that are returning to how they looked pre-COVID. Most likely, the final monthly child tax credit was deposited into your bank account last week. The Build Back Better bill didn't get passed, and so that means that those advance payments that you've received every month, if you have kids, are going away. And unless lawmakers are able to salvage the bill next year, you're also going to see the credit amount decrease by $1,000 if you have a kid who is under 17 years old, and it's decreasing by $1,600 if you have a kiddo who is younger than 6.
Yeah, we've all gotten used to a few different things in the pandemic, Matt, like having money deposited in our account every single month if you have a kiddo or multiple kiddos, and we're going to be getting weaned off of both of those things in the near future.
We call this the great weaning.
and so, yeah, Build Back Better, really, it got blown up. Obviously, there's a lot of politics behind that, but when it comes to your finances, it's going to have a major impact there. And the reason we're mentioning this is because we don't want you to be blindsided once we round the corner into 2022 and you're like, wait a second, it's the 15th of the month. Where is that money that's been coming over the past 6 months? We don't want you to expect it and then not receive it. And a lot of Americans have been receiving a lot of financial assistance. It's been showing up in your bank account. But 2022 is likely going to be the year of no more cash infusions. And it's Christmas Eve. What's done is done. But hopefully you didn't spend more than you should have this holiday season, right? Banking on some of those funds continuing, thinking that you'll have plenty of money come January and February. But yeah, it can be really difficult to taper back our spending once we've gotten used to a standard of living, once we've gotten used to money being regularly deposited. But a lot of folks are going to need to take those steps to make sure that they're staying within their new budget, which doesn't involve the child tax credit continuing to be popped into their account every month.
That's right. Joel, another casualty of that bill not passing, that e-bike tax credit. Had that passed, couples making up to $150,000 would have been eligible for a $900 tax credit. So this is sad news for everyone out there who was hoping that that would go through. Y'all know how much we love biking, and it turns out that we're not alone. Over the past 12 months, there was this 65% increase in bike sales and a whopping 240% increase in e-bike sales. Yeah, so maybe that e-bike tax credit actually wasn't necessary, but it would have been nice for everyone out there who is thinking about getting one to shave some of that cost off the top.
Yeah, we think e-bikes are basically the most efficient form of transportation, right? Like, I can't think of anything that's going to get you to and fro faster than an e-bike with using so little energy. But yeah, that tax credit looks like it's gone away too with the failure of Build Back Better. And Matt, when the average household spends, what did we say, like something like $10,000 a year in transportation costs? Every little bit helps, like knocking a few hundred bucks, $900 potentially off the cost of that e-bike is helpful. And then not to mention how much less it's going to cost you to get around on that thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, speaking of insane transportation costs, we've got a great car-related ludicrous headline for you. We'll get to that and more right after this break.
All right, we are back from the break. We're talking through our Friday flight, the different stories we came across this week. And Joel, it is now time for our ludicrous headline of the week. And this one comes from Motor Biscuit. Headline reads, Toyota is charging a monthly fee for something that used to be free.
Outrageous. Say it ain't so.
I love how they're just like casting so much doubt, like even just within the actual headline. But here's the scoop. Automaker Toyota, which, you know, for the most part, Toyota's a great company.
Sure.
But they're going to start ripping folks off if, if they want to be able to remote start
Dirt
their
bags.
Vehicles. The price, it's going to be $8 a month or $80 a year if you pay all at once.
Yeah, if you want Netflix or to be able to remote start your car.
You make the call. And, you know, you're probably assuming that we don't like this, and you are right. But the worst thing about this is that it doesn't just apply to new vehicles that are being sold. Because if that were the case, at least, you know, you would know up front. You could choose to forego that feature altogether, maybe even look for a different make and model in order to avoid an additional unnecessary subscription in your life. But this is going to apply to all models 2018 and newer. And so if you've had your Toyota car or truck for a few years, this new monthly fee could come as a shock.
Yeah, I would say so, Matt. And I think part of the problem here is that companies everywhere are trying to figure out how to reach into our financial lives in order to get recurring dollars. Like, instead of building something and selling it to you and having it work by itself as you see fit, they want to get recurring subscription dollars every single month. And we talked recently about BMW's plan to start charging a monthly fee for heated seats.
Yeah, that's
last year.
So stupid.
Which felt similarly ludicrous and ridiculous.
Egregious.
We didn't like that either. And yes, this Toyota subscription has a lengthy free trial, and it offers other benefits apart from just being able to remote start your vehicle. So it's not just this one trick pony. And one of those things is that you can monitor your kids driving.
Yeah, I saw that. That's pretty
which
cool.
Which sounds like potentially worthwhile to have a subscription for that. It might be helpful if you've got multiple kids driving that car. But the move to make everything a subscription is bad for our collective personal finances. Mm-hmm. I'd rather have, personally, a dumber car that costs me less money. And so this is something that you'll have to think about when you go to buy a vehicle these days. Is, well, are there any things that this vehicle does that aren't included at the point of sale where I'm going to have to pay the auto manufacturers every single month to access a feature? I think we're going to see more and more of that, and we're all going to have to be wary and ask those questions before we sign on the dotted line.
Yeah, which is fine, again, if you know that ahead of time. And so, you know, the fact that they're making this retroactive basically on vehicles that a lot of people already own, that's the part that really kind of rubs us the wrong way. But speaking of cars, Consumer Reports, they released their list of the most reliable car brands just a few weeks ago. To be honest, not much has changed. Lexus, Mazda, and our aforementioned Toyota, they are still the three most reliable auto manufacturers. Although the rankings, they did shift a little bit because Lexus, they took the top spot this year. But it's worth sharing because reliability is something worth considering heavily when you're buying a car. And Consumer Reports, they do a really great job of actually digging into the reliability numbers of specific years, specific makes, and different models of those makes. And so we wanted to share that because it's worth paying for access to, you know, something like Consumer Reports to make sure that you're buying a model that's going to hold up well in reliability rankings, because there's a big discrepancy in the average annual repair bill between the most reliable models and the least reliable ones. So for example, a 10-year-old BMW is going to cost you over $1,000 to maintain every single year. And so we're kind of coming back to Toyota again. We bashed them earlier, and now we're going to come back to them. Whereas a 10-year-old Toyota, it's only going to cost you like $340 every year to maintain. There's just a massive difference between maintaining a Toyota, maintaining a BMW, and we want you to be aware of that information before you get a really good deal on this BMW 3 Series and you think that I'm about to make the best decision of my life. Well, this decision might actually cost you, you know, over $1,000 every single year.
Right, yes. You definitely want to pay attention to that. And yeah, I mean, it's really good to see that Toyota ranks high in reliability and they rank low in how much it's going to cost you every year to drive an older Toyota. But it still doesn't undo my frustration with what they're doing.
Just don't get the remote start
exactly.
Option.
Exactly. But, and I think it's also important, Matt, on the note of reliability. You know, we talk about this a lot, but it's just so important just as important now as it ever has been to keep your car in good shape, and especially maybe even more than ever because with used car prices where they are right now, make sure to change your oil. Make sure to stay on top of the maintenance for that vehicle because it's cheaper to maintain it than it is to buy a new one.
Could you imagine getting low on your coolant or something like that and just driving on the interstate and having basically totaling your car without realizing and then being forced to buy a new or used vehicle in this market?
In this market right now.
I would be so upset.
Yes.
Myself. Don't make that mistake.
No, don't. And yeah, so if you need a new to you used car and you're only looking to purchase one of these top ranked reliable models, we would say that's a good thing. We want you to drive a car that is going to be less costly every year to run and to maintain. Well, you still have to have that specific vehicle checked out by your mechanic before you buy it. Even if you're like, it's a Toyota, like Corolla, like these things don't die. That is maybe mostly true, but you still want to make sure that this particular one was maintained well, and you want to have a trusted mechanic sign off on that and say, yes, it's in great shape, or no, we'll look for another one. But yeah, generally, in the long run, buying a car that rates well in surveys like this one from Consumer Reports or you know other similar surveys from JD Power is going to bode well for you in the long run when it comes to how much money you're going to be spending every year to make sure that car continues to run well.
That's right. And I will say, too, it depends on the make and the model, because actually I noticed that the second most reliable vehicle was a Kia. Did you see that on there?
It
was
okay.
Like a Kia Niro was like the second most reliable vehicle, whereas Kia, it's not even, you know, it's not listed as one of the top manufacturers. And so it kind of depends on the specific vehicle. So,
true.
Yeah, kind of dive into those details.
And the specific year sometimes. Like,
yeah.
The first
yeah.
year of a particular make and model can have issues. And then it's like the second year, they got them all sorted out. And now it's great.
That's right. All right, Joel, let's change things up a little bit. Let's talk about death.
Ooh.
Yeah, getting a little spooky, little nightmare before Christmas with the year. There's this article in the Wall Street Journal this week, and they said that millennials, they're starting to write their wills. You know, that the pandemic, it's caused most of us to realize that we aren't superhuman because we, of course, we're mortal. But it's
Speak
always...
for yourself.
we mentioned this because it's difficult to get folks in their 20s and 30s to recognize the fact that they should have a will in place. And that's especially true if you have kids. And it turns out only 1 in 4 folks within that age range actually have a will. This is good, though, because, you know, this has risen a good bit since the start of COVID. But it's still pretty low. And so if you're a How to Money listener in this age range, this is something that you should prioritize doing as soon as possible. You don't want to be that person who, you know, has an estate, who has kids, who dies, and you don't have things listed out. If that happens, that means you die intestate. And everybody knows that you don't want to be intestate.
No, nobody wants that.
You don't want to go there.
That sounds like a bunch of headaches after you're gone that you're creating for other people.
As well as a disease.
Which is actually, that's the exact reason to create a will. Yeah. It's, you know, you're going to be dead. Like, you're not going to realize what's happening.
It's not for you. It's it's for the folks you leave behind.
Exactly.
And just generally speaking, you want to avoid being intestate.
And
I'm just going to say it as much as possible. There should be a marketing campaign around you don't want to be intestate. That should be a whole advertising campaign.
Okay, well, maybe one of our favorite websites where you can create a will, freewill.com, can take this marketing opportunity and run with it.
We'll co-op.
Yes.
This idea.
Because the great thing, you know, we were talking earlier about refinancing your mortgage, and that's one of those things that people are like, it's going to take a long time. But at least the cool thing is you're potentially going to save hundreds of dollars a month, you know, or thousands of dollars a year, and it's like, all right, yeah, I'll spend the time to do that. Well, with a will, you don't get that same immediate payoff, but you do get, yeah, that peace of mind to know that you're taking care of family, friends, and kiddos if you have them. And yeah, we mentioned Free Will. That's a great site for folks who have really straightforward financial and family situations, and it costs you literally nothing to get that will made, which we like free. It's great.
Oh yeah.
It literally takes about 20 minutes to do this will, to get through, go through all the steps. And so we would suggest jumping on it. If you are a person who has a more complex situation, if you've gone through a divorce, if you have a blended family, you might want to go see a lawyer who specializes in wills and trusts. And yeah, it's going to take more time. It's going to cost more money, but it's going to be worth it in the end. And that's because, of course, you don't want to die intestate.
That's right, man.
But and I think, Matt, this is the perfect time to tell people just to put it on your calendar. Find a date
yeah.
and a time. You're like, you know what? Tuesday nights, usually pretty chill for me. If it takes 20 minutes for someone who has one of those easier family situations, like put it on the calendar and make sure to get it done during this holiday season, maybe while you have a little bit of extra time on your hands.
That's right. You can like even make it a themed night. you can play some Will Smith, getting jiggy with it in the
yes.
background. You can plan to watch Free Willy that evening. As well.
You can wear your skeleton onesie. There's so many options.
All right, one last story. Let's talk about travel. Because Joel, you know what's rough? Renewing your passport. Have you renewed your passport recently?
So
I know that mine and Kate's are totally 100% expired.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we can't go anywhere for a while until we get those things renewed.
I think mine, it probably has like a year left, which means I've had it for almost 10 years. So it's getting close to that time for me to renew it.
Mine is definitely sitting there unused. And so if you want to renew your passport, you've got to send in a bunch of physical documents. It's a huge pain. It's very 1998, speaking of Will Smith. but that isn't going to be the case for much longer because Joe Biden, just last week, he signed an executive order that's going to make renewing your passport online a thing within the next 6 to 12 months. That's awesome. And so once this online passport renewal system goes live next year, we'll be sure to mention it. But this is great news for those of us who love to travel but hate how annoying government systems, and specifically passport renewals, have been. And one other thing to keep in mind, the six-month rule, which is when oftentimes most countries won't let you in on a passport if it is going to expire within 6 months of your last date of travel. And so you're probably looking at it and thinking, oh, 6.5 months out, but you're planning to be there for like 3 weeks or something like that. Chances are they're not going to let you in. So that's something you do want to make sure that you have taken care of before you do some travel next year, before things open back up.
Yeah, that is one of those rules a lot of people don't know about. And it's one of the more frustrating rules in travel because you're like, really, that's the expiration date is 6 months sooner than
what's the point?
Says on the sheet of paper. So,
exactly.
Yeah, that's a crappy thing about passport expiration. But it's, important to know. And hopefully next time you need to renew your passport, hopefully you've got enough time left on it to take one more trip if you want to. And then the next time you got to renew, it's going to be much easier. That's the hope. But Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. And we're going to have all new How to Money episodes throughout the rest of this year. And of course, into January. It's important to note that a lot of podcasts, they're running repeats. You and I, we're not doing it.
We'll save that for next year. But this year, no, we got good, fresh content for you. We hope everyone has a great Christmas Eve, a great Christmas tomorrow if you celebrate. And we will see you back here on Monday. Joel, until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.